Hello and welcome to Book Hype number 21. Mikal and I have decided to take over Book Hype and talk all about Rick Riordan today. Woohoo!
Yeah.
The other hosts couldn't join us, unfortunately, so we have kidnapped Kristen to come chat with us. Hi, Kristen.
Hi.
How are you doing?
I'm very, very good and very excited to talk about House of Hades because, oh my God.
Yes.
Yeah.
So we're mostly going to center this discussion around Rick Riordan and the Percy Jackson world in general, but there will be some House of Hades discussion, which includes spoilers, because I'm sorry, but I need to talk to somebody about this book, and I have to talk about some very specific things, and then we'll talk about some other stuff, too. But in the meantime, what are you guys reading right now?
Well, I am reading, I just finished The House of Hades on Friday night, and now I'm reading a book called Relic by Heather Terrell, which is interesting. It's sort of like it's actually really hard to describe. It's like, it takes place in like the North Pole after like the world has been like annihilated by floods, and people are living in this sort of like pseudo-medieval society, but they still have all these relics of the past, which are like computers and mirrors and makeup and stuff like that. So the main character, her brother, dies while he's training to be one of the people who goes out and finds a relic. So she kind of takes over and goes out instead, and she's been trained to be like a maiden and whatever. So yeah, it's definitely interesting. It's kind of odd, like every so often, like they talk in this really interesting kind of not high, but formal sort of language. And then they'll say like the false god of Tylenol. And I'll be like, what? Yeah.
That's so random.
I know. It's really funny.
Kristen, what about you?
Well, let's see. Besides still reading Allegiant, which I know you guys had a discussion about recently, and I did not listen because I'm trying really hard not to be spoiled about it. I'm working on that, but I've also, I've just finished Rainbow Rowell's Eleanor and Park, which I loved. I listen to audiobooks while I'm at work because I type all day as an order entry tech. So I finished that, and I'm now working on Attachments, also by Rainbow Rowell, which I am really, really liking. It's about this guy who he works in IT for like a newspaper, but he works the night shift, and his job is basically to read through flagged emails that people have sent. And so he feels like he's intruding on people's privacy, but that's basically what he's there to do. And so there's these two ladies who email back and forth all the time, and they're technically flaunting the rules. Like, they're not really following the guidelines, but he doesn't turn them in because he thinks that they're just so funny. And so he just keeps reading their flagged emails, and it's really cute. Like, so far, you haven't met the girls besides just their emails. You've basically read it from his point of view, but it's a really cool way to tell a story, and I'm looking forward to him actually meeting one of the two girls.
That sounds really interesting.
It's really random.
I just finished Grasshopper Jungle by Andrew Smith, which may just be the weirdest book I've ever read in my entire life.
Is this Andrew Smith who wrote The Marbury Lens?
Yes.
Oh my God, I couldn't finish that book. It was so weird.
Yeah, okay. It must be like a thing with him. But I have to read you guys the back cover of this because it's just... Oh, I can't. All right. In the small town of Ealing, Iowa, Austin and his best friend Robbie have accidentally unleashed an unstoppable army. An army of horny, hungry, 6-foot-tall praying mantises that only want to do two things. This is the truth. This is history. It's the end of the world, and nobody knows anything about it. You know what I mean. Funny, intense, complex, and brave, Grasshopper Jungle brilliantly weaves together everything from testicle-dissolving genetically modified corn to the struggles of recession-era small-town America in this groundbreaking coming-of-age stunner.
Did that make any sense?
No, what? That's the thing. And like, honestly, I would never have picked this book up except, you know, it was given to me by Jen so I could review it for the site. And my review is going to go up, well, by the time this comes out, it'll have been up yesterday, Monday. And yeah, I never would have picked it up, but it's like it sounds really weird, but it's about so much more than that. And yeah, it's true. Like they do talk about testicle dissolving genetically modified corn and like 6 foot tall, really horny praying mantises that like try to eat everybody. It's ridiculous, but it's also about a boy who struggles with his sexuality, and it's basically being inside a stream of consciousness mind of like a 15-year-old boy, which is a little frightening, and I'm not sure I'd want to do it again, but it was really interesting.
Yeah, the Marbury lens I heard like incredible reviews about, and the cover looked really steampunk and awesome, so I was really excited to read it. And it's by no means a bad book at all. Like it's the writing quality is very high, and it's certainly very interesting. But it's also sort of about sexuality in a way. It's about a boy who a teenager who gets kidnapped at a party and kidnapped by basically a rapist, and he is drugged in this guy's house, and he probably escapes through some weird circumstances, but after that he kind of breaks down mentally and he goes on this trip to England, and he meets this person who basically like gives him this pair of glasses. And the glasses take him to a world called Marbury, which is the most disturbing, I guess, sort of steampunky whatever place ever. And his best friend is like a member of these like almost Reaver-like, like from Firefly, groups of people who like haunt the place. And I mean, it's bizarre. And he's like hopping back and forth, and he meets this girl, and like, some people like read the book and they're like, oh, he clearly never even escaped from the rapist. This is just like the guy drugs him. So it's like he's just dreaming this whole thing. And like, it's a really, really, I didn't finish it. I at a certain point I was like, I can't handle this anymore. And it's telling like six different stories at the same time. So I think Andrew Smith is definitely a very talented writer. I haven't read anything of his that I would want to read again.
Yeah, Grasshopper Jungle was really weird. I've heard good things about Winger. That one he wrote more recently than The Marbury Lens. So I'm kind of interested in picking that up to see how different it is from this one. But if you have eclectic tastes, I would definitely check out his books because, yeah, he's a really good writer, but it's just weird.
And it's funny because I was about to say that Rainbow Rowell is sort of weird, but like in an unconventional way. Like, I don't think anybody would kind of tell the same stories that she does, but definitely in a very different way from Andrew Smith.
Yes.
Yeah, just having finished Eleanor and Park, and I haven't read Fangirl yet because I couldn't get my hands on it from the library yet. But yeah, she has a very different way of describing things. Like a very it her she's very different from typical, narrative structure and whatnot. She has some She likes to do things a little differently. So yeah, I can see where you would say that she's a little bit on the like odd side. But I've never read anything quite like the Grasshopper Jungle book. That sounds
Me
crazy.
neither. Yeah, it is. But other than that, I've started Insurgent finally. So then I can read that and then I'll get to Allegiant and like 2 months from now I'll be freaking out like everybody else is. So I'm desperately trying to avoid spoilers. It's really hard, but I kind of have an idea maybe which direction the book's gonna go in the end, but like I'm trying not to think about it, and I'm just hoping that like I don't see any clear indication of what the ending's gonna be like.
Same here. I keep seeing non-spoiler things that, kind of lead you to think one thing or another, and I'm
Yes,
like,
yes.
no, I don't want to know anything. Like, I'm trying really hard to get through it. Oh, man, oh man.
So I talked about this on our Allegiant podcast, but I got spoiled in like absolutely positively the dumbest way ever. Because everybody was like running around trying to spoil it for people, and I was like, no, I'm not going to read it like that, blah blah blah. And then I was on fanfiction.net and I was posting a story, and it was an Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. story actually, and I went to like the most recent stories that have been published to see if mine was up yet, and there was a story saying like Allegiant spoilers, blah 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 blah, and I was like, oh,
Oh no.
I know. I was like, at least like I should have gotten spoiled by somebody who's being like deliberately, yeah, whatever. But that's so dumb. Like, you can't just say Allegiant spoilers and then write Allegiant spoilers. Like, yeah.
Like, hello, not on the same line.
I know. Oh,
Oh.
all right. Well, moving on from our interesting reads, we have a book bites this morning. Actually, it's afternoon now. Usually we record in the morning, but it's 2 o'clock for me, so I guess that's not really morning. This one was actually Kristen's idea, and we loved it. It's what types of narrators do we prefer? And I've got a little bit of a list here, so we'll just start off with the first one. But do you guys tend to prefer male or female narrators, or don't you really care?
I don't really care personally. I feel like this is probably bad, but I feel like I might like more books with male narrators. But then again, at the same time, I like third person narration better than first person narration, and I think more books are written from a boy's perspective that are second person. Or not second person, third person, and I so that might be part of it. But I mean, as a general rule, like I certainly won't like see like, oh, girl narrator, definitely not reading that. Like, no.
Kristen, what about you?
I was gonna say, more often than not, I think I like books that are split. Like I like it when you have two different points of view and like the male and the female, and it's you get point of view chapters from both of them. I think that's more or less what, if I had to choose a preference, that would probably be it. Other than that, I don't judge a book like, oh, that's written, from a boy's perspective. I don't really want to read that. Like, no. None of that. Like, I mean, if a book sounds intriguing, it doesn't matter to me what gender, so.
Yeah, I think we're all pretty much on the same page. I don't really care. I think I tend to read more books from a female point of view because it seems like, the young adult genre and the types of books that I tend to like go towards just happen to be female protagonists. But like Grasshopper Jungle, that's from a guy's point of view. And I mean, granted, it was kind of strange because I didn't know their minds worked like quite like that, but it was really interesting to get that different point of view. And so yeah, I'm up for whatever as long as it's a good story. Who cares? So Mikal, you said that you prefer third person over first person. How come?
I just think maybe because I read a lot of YA, first person is done a lot, and I don't know. I never like first person doesn't necessarily like connect me to a character in the way that I think it's supposed to. Maybe that's because like one of my seminal reading experiences was Harry Potter, and obviously that's not in first person, but like you know everything about Harry, even though it's not in first person. So it might just be that I've kind of been sort of trained to prefer that. I like it when books can kind of step away from the characters for a bit and kind of talk about things in a general sense. I think that's a really good opportunity for humor to come in and, for you to learn about the world in an interesting way. And I'm not so keen on being limited. I feel like I'm limited enough by my own perspective in real life that first person perspective when I'm in a fantasy world or a dystopian or whatever, I kind of like to have a broader view.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I think it's interesting that you feel less connected to a first person point of view, considering people write in first person so that you're more inside the character's head. So that's kind of an interesting way to look at
Can't really like defend that. It's just
it.
you know.
It's just something that is. That's cool. Kristen, what about you?
I'd have to say it kind of depends on, again, the type of novel. Like McCall said, if it's like a fantasy novel, I kind of want it to be third person because then you get a greater look at the whole world and you get to see more of it than if you're just following the first person point of view. But if it's like a young adult novel or whatever set in reality, like in our world, I tend to drift towards first person novels, just because I really do like the mystery, and I like the limitedness of not seeing everything and just seeing this character's perspective and missing things. And then later on in the novel, like them discovering that they missed things and you looking back and saying, oh, like I totally should have seen, you know, I could, should have seen it from the other person's perspective too. Like, I can't believe I didn't do that. I like that sort of thing. So yeah, it definitely depends.
Yeah, I feel very much like this, how I do with the male versus female question, in that it doesn't really bother me which one it is. And for the longest time, I never really picked up on, I mean, I knew what first person, third person was, but it wasn't something that actually caught my attention. And if you asked me, you know, oh, what was this book written? I probably would have been like, I have no idea, because I just didn't notice. But I mean, more so now, like, I think I do prefer third person, but I will have to say I hate omniscient point of view with a fiery, burning passion. I think it's the dumbest thing ever. And I think that it's because a lot of people can't do it right. And you tend to get these passages written where you feel very much like it's a third person and it's inside somebody's head, and then you like hop over to somebody else. And to me, that feels wrong. Like, they didn't write it correctly. And I noticed that a lot with some more recent books that I've been reading, like Casual Vacancy and things like that. And I don't like it. It throws me off when you feel like you're inside one person's head and then all of a sudden you're inside somebody else's. So no omniscient for me.
So I have to say this because I have to. Megan Whelan Turner's Conspiracy of Kings, which is the fourth book in her sequence, is actually told from both first person and third person semi-omniscient. It's really interesting. Like, she starts it off and he's like the main character of this particular novel. Well, her books all switch perspective. The first one is in first person the whole way through. The second two are in kind of omniscient third person, sort of hopping all over the place. Yeah, I guess it is omniscient, but in a really interesting way. And then the fourth one just does this like back and forth kind of thing that, like, it really does take you a while to get used to each one. Like, you're used to being in somebody's head, and then you kind of get jarred when you're like, okay, you know, looking at the scene objectively, and then you go back. So it's a very interesting kind of writing decision, and everybody should read them.
This is perfect. Kristen, you don't know how well you did picking this book, Bites, because it's so relevant right now. Because actually, Grasshopper Jungle is first person, but it's also kind of omniscient because he's telling it from past tense. And it's in, you know, I did this and I did that. But he also sort of jumps around and tells you what happens while he's doing those things. So in a way, it's very much like omniscient, but like first person omniscient, which just feels weird to me, but it kind of works. And I actually didn't hate the way that he did it, because it was cool to obviously be inside his head and know what was going on, but also knowing like other things that were happening elsewhere that was going to affect him in, you know, maybe a chapter or two. So yeah, I guess for this book, it worked pretty well. But that other one you were talking about sounds really confusing.
Yeah, no, it's interesting, though. I think by the time, like, it's interesting because the character who narrates it is in the fourth book. Like, you've been waiting kind of to see him for a while. So when you do, it's really interesting. And it's really kind of fun to get back with him. I will say that Kristen, you mentioned in the notes, like, how difficult that is from a writing perspective, like figuring out how to write your story. And that's something I was just talking to my sister about. Like, it's so hard to write a story before you figure out how to tell it. And I haven't figured out yet a way to tell the story that I'm trying to write now. And it's so frustrating because I'm writing this and I'm like, this is wrong. There's something wrong about this. I haven't found the right voice yet. I don't even know if it's the perspective, but I think it's, you know, it's very, very, it's a real challenge. And I think it's something that you take for granted when you read a book, but when you start writing one, it's a different story.
Yes, I'm very much an in the moment kind of writer. Like when something happens and I get a bout of inspiration, I will write a paragraph on my phone. I will write it on my laptop. I will write it on a scrap piece of paper. And then I'll take it and put, type it up in an actual document and then keep going from there. And so I have these little bits from, like more of a first person perspective, and then it kind of drifts to third person because I've got this other piece that I wrote, for the same story, but it's from this other way. And so for me, yeah, it's a real struggle to make a decision and stick with it. Like I just have to figure out how best this story is told and just make the decision and go for it. 'Cause right now I'm just having trouble making a choice.
Yeah. It's like, tell me how to tell you, but the book is like, that's your choice.
Right, exactly.
So last part to this book bites is unreliable narrators. Do you guys like them or dislike them? Or like we were before, do you just not really care?
Dislike, which is very like unliterary of me, and I'm sure that there are books with. I mean, it's funny because The Thief by Megan Whalen Turner, which is the first book in her sequence, is an unreliable narrator, but for the most, well, okay, I guess it depends. It depends on whether the narrator is like chronically unreliable, like if they're sick or if, like 17 and Gone, I think I was talking about that when we discussed it. It was very difficult for me to read because it's really hard for me to be in somebody's head that isn't seeing things the way I would see them more or less, And I just find that unpleasant. It's difficult. So, normal unreliable narrators in that like, okay, a situation is happening and they don't like they're biased by certain factors, like that's fine, but like severely unreliable narrators drive me crazy.
Yeah, I think you tend to feel cheated at the end of those books, and that's definitely a problem. And I would agree. I would say I actually really enjoyed 17 and Gone, but I would say for the most part, if they're severely unreliable, it is hard when you reach the end of a book to kind of be okay with being duped for that long, 'cause you just feel cheated. But what about you, Kristen?
I have to agree, I'm not a huge fan of the unreliable narrator. Although, if it's the type of character that you know is unreliable from the beginning, and you're kind of aware of it and can look at it from that perspective, knowing that this character is flawed and the way they're looking at it is flawed, and so you have, your own perspective on their view of the story, that I've always find really interesting.
Yeah, that's true. Because then that way you sort of know what's going on, but then yet you still have the unreliable narrator.
Exactly. Yeah, it just makes it's really interesting because it makes you think more about what you're seeing and what you're reading. Like you have to interpret what they mean and then what actually is going on in the scene, which it makes for an immersive experience because you really have to think hard about it.
Okay, so Book Bites is done. Are you guys ready to talk about Percy Jackson?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yay. Okay, so the big thing with this is that the three of us are definitely older than the target audience for the Percy Jackson books, which are middle grade, and we are all in our 20s. So how did you find these books, and why do you like them if we're so much older than what the target audience is?
Well, okay, I found, oh God, I don't even remember when I started reading them. I think it might have been at the end of college. I don't know. It was around the time that The Lightning Thief came out, the movie. Because I read it and then I watched the movie on video on demand. But I think I just knew that like a lot of young kids were reading it, and I was like, well, I guess I'll give that a try. They made it a movie, blah blah blah. And I bought it to read on weekends because I kind of figured like there's five books, this will hold me for a while. And I couldn't I like I tore through those books so fast. I was like, what is going on? Like I can't put these down. And I like raced back to Barnes & Noble to get more the rest of them. I always feel bad because whenever I'm going to pick up something Percy Jackson related, I'm always going into the kids section in Barnes & Noble, and I'm like, I shouldn't feel bad, but I mean, not bad, but like I shouldn't feel embarrassed, and yet I do. But yeah, that's how I found them. And I guess I guess what really kind of flipped the switch for me was when I realized that Percy Jackson is at its heart about children who feel horribly, horribly betrayed by their parents. And that's really what it's about, beyond all the magic and everything. And that kind of really hooked me because it was such an interesting scenario for that, very normal and upsetting feeling. And it really gave the books a really rich emotional undertone that I had not been looking for before.
Kristen, what about you?
I'm definitely in my late 20s, and I didn't discover these until about June of this year. I actually had seen Karen on the site reporting all of the Percy Jackson news and whatnot, and when they did the book Battleships not too long ago, I saw just how passionate the Persebeth fans were, and I was like, that sounds like a really interesting thing. And I've always found Greek mythology to be really, really fun, really interesting. And there's so many stories, and there's so many, gods and things that have happened in that I've always wanted to kind of, I always get drawn into that world when I find books that are, centered around it. So I type all day. So I found the audiobooks at my library. They had all of them. And I was like, this is perfect. So I just started with Lightning Thief and listened to them all in like 2 weeks. And I ate them up. I was blown away by the story. Considering that it's aimed towards, middle school, towards younger children, I was blown away by the just the overall tone of them. They don't seem to be written for kids. You can enjoy them as an adult. There's a lot in there for you that's not just, preaching to younger people. And I really, really liked that about them.
Yeah, subliminal messages in my articles for the win. Getting you to read them.
Oh, yeah.
If you read it back, it says, "Read me."
Yes, over and over and over again. I kind of found them by accident, actually. I don't know why I remember this, but I vividly remember the first time that I saw Percy Jackson. But I was in Target and I was looking for a new book and I saw The Lightning Thief and I flipped it over and read it and found out it was about Greek mythology. And if you guys know anything about me, it's that I am obsessed with Greek mythology. And so I was like, well, I have to read these. And so I read the first one and as soon as I finished it, I was like, dude, these are really good. And so I just kept reading them and I've read pretty much. Well, I've read all of the books in the Percy Jackson series, and I've read his other mythology series too, except for the last book, which is a confession I've never made before. But they're just incredible. And yeah, like you were saying, kids can read them, young adults can read them. I gave them to my mom to read them. She loves them. It's just a great story that kind of transcends any sort of ages, and they're just good books. And yeah, I would highly recommend them to anybody, really.
I have a confession to make, actually. I knew almost nothing about Greek mythology, other than the movie Hercules. I really didn't know anything
Like the
about.
cartoon Hercules? Oh, God.
But it's that was really funny because I wasn't like, oh yeah, this is an interesting take on it. For me, it was more or less the first time I was learning about it, and I felt so smart. But the funny thing is, I teach writing to younger kids, and they are all universally obsessed with Percy Jackson. It's really, really impressive to me, and in the way that I think probably Harry Potter was when we were younger. And Harry Potter still definitely is, but I think Percy Jackson, because it's ongoing, is a little more front and center. So it's the number of Percy Jackson ripoffs that I've read are really hilarious and very touching, because they mean so much to these kids. And I just have to share this little anecdote. I was talking to a kid, I think he was 7 at the time, and he was writing a Percy Jackson ripoff, and I was trying to talk to him about the series. I was like, oh, who would oh, and he asked me, who's my godly parent? And I was like, oh, I think it would be Athena if I had a godly parent. And he's like, well, my dad is Hephaestus. And I was
You mean you're like, you think that your godly parent would be, no, my dad is Hephaestus. And I was like, wow, Rick Riordan.
Aww.
I think beyond what you're aware. It was
Yeah.
very, very cute.
These books have such an effect on kids who don't like to read. And I think, like, besides what's in the actual book, I think that is just a beautiful thing because, the main character, Percy Jackson, he has ADD and he's never done too extremely well in school. And yet, he's the special demigod that gets to fight all these monsters and stuff. And it shows that even when you have these quote unquote faults, you can still be somebody special. And just the way that the books are written and the way they kind of speak to those kind of kids is a really great thing.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree.
But hey, the real reason why we're here, let's talk about House of Hades. Woohoo! I'm so excited. sorry. So, Kristen, because you might not be familiar with the way that we rate books on this podcast, what we do is when we suggest for people to either buy the book, borrow the book, or don't even bother reading it. So, for House of Hades, how would you rate
Oh, I'd buy it. I have bought it. I
it?
own it. Yeah, no, I would definitely buy it. I loved it. I thought it was really good.
Nicole?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's funny to do this for a book in the series. Especially like this. It's the fourth book in a 5-book series. But yeah, no, I think it's great. It's yeah.
Yeah, I would totally recommend people to buy the whole series, the Percy Jackson and Olympian series, the Heroes of Olympus series, buy all the books.
Even buy The Blood of Olympus, which isn't even out yet.
Yeah.
Right, just buy it now.
God, I am
Trust
so
me.
excited for that book.
I know.
I know.
All right, so let's talk a little bit about the characters in House of Hades. The really interesting thing about the Heroes of Olympus books is that we have a lot of narrators. There's like seven main demigods. And so we get, like Percy and Annabeth, Leo, Piper. God, I don't even know if I can name them all. Jason. Nico isn't a narrator, but he's pretty prominent. I'm missing Hazel and Frank. Ooh, I did get them all. So which characters do you guys like the most?
Okay, so I will say that I think that the proliferation of characters is maybe a point against the series in general, because God, there's so much to do, and so many people to hop in and out of. That said, I did think that it worked pretty well in this book, but obviously Percy and Annabeth are my favorites. But I think of the new characters, I really, really like Hazel and Frank. I think that they both have just incredibly twisted stories that like are really bizarre, and I appreciate that, and very dark histories. And they both have problems that I feel for, and I like them together. They're very sweet. They're
Yeah.
both very like unassuming, you know?
Yeah, that's true. Kristen, what about you?
Yes, well, I too will always love Annabeth's point of view as well as Percy's. I really, really like Leo and Frank's. Frank, there's just something about when you're in Frank's head, the way he refers to other people, the way he refers to Leo, it's just so great. Like, it's really funny, and you can tell just how snarky Frank is for himself. He's not really that way in front of other people, but just the way he refers to people in his head just gets me every time. But I really, really love Leo. I love how big a heart he has and how he doesn't necessarily believe that he has as big a heart as he does. Like, he questions his own motives before he does things or after he does things. I just love that he doesn't even trust himself to get things right. And it's just so great. I love Leo.
Yeah, pretty much the same thing you guys said. I love Percy and Annabeth. I think after all of this time, it's really hard not to appreciate the connection that they have and just them as characters because they've grown so much. But definitely have major love for Frank, which I didn't think I would, and I'm not sure I did before this book, but Frank really stepped it up in this book. And the part where he's fighting off, I'm not even going to pretend to like remember what the actual monster name names were, but when he was on the bridge and he was fighting off those like evil cow things with like really bad breath or whatever. I know it starts with a K, but that's it. They, like, when he defeated all of them and he, like, turned to his father and he was like, you need to help me right now. I was like, whoa, you know, Frank just became somebody completely different. And he kind of, like, owned himself and his body for the first time. And it was just such a special moment. And he did it again later on, too, when he was fighting off all the monsters with the zombie Roman soldier people things. And, it was just really great to see him become a leader in this book, which I actually didn't really expect. But I love Leo too. I think he's hilarious. I think he's a very broken character. It's sad, all the things that he's been through and stuff, but you can't blame him for being so sarcastic. But he's a really fun character. I like Nico a lot, especially after this book. Nico. Yeah.
I can't believe I guess because he's not a POV, but yeah, Nico's
yeah. We'll save Nico discussion for its own point because we definitely have to talk about that. Yes. I find it really interesting, though, that the three of us didn't pick Piper and Jason. And
I think Jason suck, okay?
Like, I don't mind them. I think, like, in the first book in this series, I definitely really liked them. Now, I guess I don't really care, and they sort of feel like a Percy and Annabeth ripoff to me. And that's not to say I dislike them, but they're definitely at the bottom of my list.
Yeah, I agree. They're definitely towards the bottom. Jason and I'm a little more endeared toward Jason than Piper. There's just something about Piper that annoys me. Like, maybe it's just that she tends to whine before she, like, thinks to fix things. Like, she doesn't – there's something about her. I've never been a huge fan of hers. Jason has his moments for me. I think his inner struggle in this book, trying, like, to decide between the Greek and the Roman loyalty, like, where he wants to belong, I thought that was really cool and really, really interesting. But besides that, he doesn't really – stick out to me as a favorite character because there's nothing that really like sets him apart for me.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's interesting that you said that you liked them more at the beginning, Karen, because I read The Lost Hero and I wasn't sure what I was expecting exactly, but I really disliked that book. I was not impressed at all. I thought it was basically a waste of time. And I really didn't like Leo and Piper. I mean, Jason and Piper. Leo grew on me. But Jason and Piper have sort of grown on me a little bit as like time goes by and it's not on their shoulders to tell us the whole story. It's a little bit easier to like them, I guess, because like they can sort of have problems and not need to solve them right away. But like I guess part of what I was disappointed in The Lost Hero, and I know that, like, being a son of Hephaestus is a huge part of Leo's character, but I kind of thought it would have been really interesting to see Leo be the son of Aphrodite and Piper to be the daughter of Hephaestus, because I thought that would have been, like, unusual and not what we were expecting. I mean, we've only met, like, one son of Aphrodite, right? So I thought that would have been really interesting. And it's hard to sympathize with somebody whose biggest problem is, like, well, I'm really pretty, and I kind of have the ability to compel people to do whatever I want. Like, gee, this sucks, you know?
Yeah, I totally feel you there. That's just, like, we're actually supposed to feel bad for her about this? That's kind of hard.
Yeah, and, like, I don't want to I don't want to devalue, like, whatever issues she has, but compared to everybody else's, they're just not that interesting.
Especially when you add in, like, the famous dad thing.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, I feel really bad for you. You've had it really hard. Like, yeah. Oh. Like they've all had their issues, and so there are things that you feel bad about for each of the characters. But Piper's just, for some reason, seem really melodramatic for me.
Hazel had to kill her mother, okay?
Exactly.
Yeah, I think that's it. It's not that, you know, like you said, I don't want to devalue anything. And I don't think that it's not that Piper, you know, doesn't have her own issues. It's just that compared to everyone else's, hers don't seem as important.
Yeah. And Jason, I think, only has really become interesting, like, because he was, like, so poised as the hero.
You know, like now that he doesn't have to be the only hero, it's easier to take him, you know. But like earlier on, it was like, okay, Jason's gonna save the day. I'm like, yeah, he's gonna have trouble, but like not really, and you know.
Yeah, definitely. So, okay, let's talk about Nico then while we're still on characters. I'm just gonna come out and say what the big deal with House of Hades was, and it's that we learned that Nico is gay and that he had a crush on Percy for a long time, and this is one of the biggest secrets that he had. So, how did you guys react to this news, Mikal?
I sort of started to, well, okay, so I saw somebody post something on Tumblr like about Nico's character development, like from Rick Riordan's website. And I didn't see what it was, but it kind of alerted me to the fact that there was something up with Nico. So then I was like, oh, okay, I have to like get through this. And I was pretty near that scene where he and Jason go to Eros, whatever. I was so I guess when they were like when the guy was like, yeah, that's right, I fell in love with a dude, I was like, okay, I guess he's kind of planting this. And then but it was sort of confusing because he earlier, I think in Mark of Athena or some point, like Annabeth thinks like she thought that Nico always had a crush on her, and it kind of she didn't really like that. And I was like, I was really confused by that because I was like, I never really got that sense. So I was sort of like, is it just going to be Annabeth or is he really going to go there? And like, yeah, I don't know. By the way, I don't think he's over Percy yet. I think he's totally saying that he's over him, but he's not. Which makes me sad because I would like him to get over Percy because, like, find somebody else. It's
Yeah, that was
hard
my
to,
big thing
like, I
too.
can't, you know, I can't root for Nico and Percy. Like, that's not gonna happen, you know? Like,
Right.
yeah.
I have to say, when I also read something before I got to the Nico scene, and it wasn't that Nico had an interesting, you know, storyline coming up or whatever. But it was that someone in one of the demigods was gay. And I was sitting there like racking my brain, and I'm like, who could it be? Like, you know, we've kind of seen it from everybody's perspective, and I can't really think of who it would be. So of course my mind landed on Leo, because after the Hazel thing kind of happened between Hazel and Frank, and he's kind of made his peace with that, I thought maybe Leo meets some guy along the way that he just like falls for. So originally, that's what I was thinking. And then we get to this scene with Nico, and it makes so much sense. Like, it was literally like bells went off in my head. I was like, of course. Like, that, you know, for me, I always saw like the jealousy with the him and Percy and Annabeth thing, but I never knew why it didn't quite feel right. I was with you. I never really thought that he had a thing for Annabeth, but I never put two and two together that he had a thing for Percy. And so it makes a lot of sense to me. And I have to tell you, I didn't really like Nico in the first couple of books that we got storyline from him, but I'm really liking him now that I understand him better. Now that I'm starting to see where he's coming from, it makes a whole lot more sense to me.
Yes, I feel exactly the same way. To tell you the truth, I don't really remember much about Nico from the previous books. He never really stuck out to me, other than that he was like really mean sometimes, and that, you know, so I never really liked him all that much. I like him a lot more after this book because I feel like he's sort of become a three-dimensional character, and we just know a lot more about him and the reasons why maybe he was acting out before and that sort of thing, and it really kind of endears you to him. And I pretty much got spoiled, which happens sometimes when you have to cover stuff for Hypable and that sort of thing, but I saw a lot of people saying like, "Oh, so I think the spoilers are true." That it was when I put up the character art for Eros, and somebody was like, "Oh, I think it's true what they're saying about Nico, that Nico's gonna be gay and that sort of thing." And I was like, "Oh, that's interesting." And then people were posting like pictures because some people got the book early, and they were posting pictures of that section, and they were like, "See, it's true, it's true." And I was like, "Well, that's why you should avoid comments on our articles sometimes." So I kind of knew that it was going to happen, but it didn't really bother me. I just really wanted to get to that part and find out like the circumstances around it. But I thought it was a great twist. I definitely applaud Rick Riordan for doing that. I think that's really cool. And I actually sort of had a similar thing to you, Kristen, in that when Leo got over Hazel, sort of, I was like, wait, so now that like we know that Nico's gay, are Nico and Leo gonna get together? Which I, kind of think would be an interesting thing. And Leo gets with Calypso, which like I'm totally on board with. I thought that was really cool. But I just want Nico to be happy, you guys. 'Cause yeah, there's no way that, Annabeth and Percy are not gonna be a thing for like ever and the end of time. So Nico just needs to be happy.
And I mean, what I like about it also, I mean, I'm actually different from you guys. I've loved Nico since the end of the Titan's Curse when he like freaked out and went all dark. I've just been like obsessed with him. But and I had this odd feeling that like Rick Riordan didn't like him because like or didn't like him as much as like I did or other people did because what was it? He kept saying that like he wasn't going to be a point of view, and then they had the whole thing about how about like he has this crush on Annabeth, and I was like, that's weird. It doesn't really make sense. Like I wasn't sure how we were supposed to feel about Nico, but now obviously that's it's kind of cleared up. But I like that being gay, like while it's a big part of his psychology, and it does clear up a ton of things, it's not his only issue. Like he feels fundamentally rejected by everybody. And part of that is his own fault, because he's a moody teenager and like it kind of suits him to be a loner. But at the same time, like it's true, he is a child of Hades. He does have scary powers. He doesn't have a place really in either camp, And I like that it's, he did tie it in very much, Riordan did. To Nico's other issues, and I think that that was a really healthy way of doing things because it wasn't just like, okay, well now it's good because we know like and he got it off his chest. It's there's like a lot of psychological problems there. I mean, the loss of Bianca was just a huge, horrible blow to him, and I like that he's still not really over that. Like he's okay with the fact that she's moved on, but he's still like grieving for her horribly. And it and the whole thing about how like I'm not even in this like from this century, is also just really honest, I think.
Yes, I 100% agree with you on all of that. And I think on top of that, one of the other great things about, the fact that we find out that Nico is gay is that it didn't come out of nowhere and it wasn't just to do it, because there is a lot of stuff in Greek mythology and Greek culture where, people were gay and they did things like that. And so it wasn't just to be like, oh, we're going to make this set of people happy because now one of the characters is gay. It wasn't about that at all. It actually made a lot of sense, not only with his character, but with the whole mythology part and, like Eros, and we got that whole scene and everything like that. And it didn't just kind of, you could tell he wasn't doing it just to do it. And I really appreciated that because a lot of the times in television shows and stuff like that, you always kind of have like the gay sidekick because they know they're going to make people happy with that. And this to me didn't feel like that at all.
Yeah, I agree. It definitely felt organic. It felt right for the character. It didn't feel like something contrived to meet, an obligation. Like, this felt right for Nico. I totally believed it the second I read it. I was like, of course, like, that makes so much more sense. So, yeah, I agree.
Do you guys think he's over Percy yet, or?
No.
Yeah.
No, I think he's gonna have to be, but yeah, I think that maybe that'll happen when they get to talk face to face about it or something like that. I mean, we've got one more book, so it's gonna be interesting to see how this gets tied up or, if it gets tied up at all. I'll be pretty disappointed if it doesn't, but one book isn't a whole lot of time to get through as many issues as Nico has.
Right, that's true.
Oh
But
yeah.
see, that's something that I'm curious about. I guess kind of skipping to sort of what happens at the end of House of Hades. He goes off with Rhaena, who is just a goddess. Oh my God, I love her. And Coach Hedge, who whatever I don't really like, but I none of those people are POVs, and
Nico's not a POV, so I don't know how we're gonna like. I was really expecting him and Percy to have more of a maybe not a "Oh, Percy, I'm in love with you" conversation, but like more of a discussion at the end. And it was just sort of like, Percy is still in the same place that he always has been with Nico, which is not really understanding what's going on with him. And I mean, it's fine on like a character level, but on a like overall development of the plot level, I'm a little curious as to where it's gonna go. Because Jason's not gonna tell him, right? I mean.
Right. Yeah, it was a little disappointing that Nico basically ran away. I mean, he's not, looking at this head on and facing it like that, and it's kind of sad, but then again, he's been through so much, you can't necessarily blame him for that.
I kind of got the sense that, and this is really heavy, and maybe it's too heavy for the series in general, but I kind of got the sense that he was sort of planning suicide. Did you guys get that? Like he said, like when he said to Jason, like, "I'm gonna fulfill my oath and then I'm leaving forever." Like, I don't.
Oh, I didn't necessarily think that, but I mean, you can just tell how depressed he is. And I just really hope that he doesn't run away from everything for the rest of his life because he deserves so much more than that.
Yeah, I can't say I thought of that either. Like, I didn't see it as a suicide thing, but again, I mean, it's not, especially for a child of Hades that understands more about death than we could ever know. It might not be as dramatic for him as it would be for every other character in the story. I didn't think about it, but I can see it being something he would even think about. Like, I can, it's not out of character for Nico.
Yeah.
After all of that character discussion, well, I guess this sort of ties in too, because I was going to say one of my favorite scenes was, well, they were in Tartarus for a lot of this book, Percy and Annabeth were, and I thought that this was done really, really well, and it was scary, and it was creepy, and it was exciting, and they had to go through a lot of things. And so some of the characters that we meet there were some of my favorite, believe it or not, because we had Bob, and then we have Small Bob, and it was amazing when Small Bob turned into no longer Small Bob. And I mean, oh my God, it was just adorable. And then you have, I'm sure I'm gonna totally mess this name up, but Domison, who was a giant. And he decided to change his fate and help Percy and Annabeth. And I think just everything that like Bob went through and everything that Domison went through to help these two demigods when they had no reason not to sends a huge message. And I really liked the idea that they decided to sacrifice their lives for these two demigods because they thought what they were doing was right, regardless of how they were brought up, and regardless of the fact that they're monsters who would normally fight people like Percy and Annabeth.
Yeah, I thought it was a fascinating kind of choice. The Bob stuff sort of started off. I had no memory of Bob. I still have no memory of like what was his name? Iapetus. Don't remember Percy fighting him or him falling into the Lethe or anything like that. I don't even know what book that was supposed to be from. But at first, I was sort of writing it off as something that I do sort of do with these books is that I somewhat discard in my own head like the more childish elements, but I was really very pleasantly surprised with Percy's whole journey with that, his the guilt that he felt over kind of depriving Iapetus of his choices, and and the uncertainty, that like, at some point he's like, I think he says, Iapetus could be, or Bob could basically like kill us now, and I don't know that I would feel justified in stopping him. And that was r really mature, and I was very pleased at that. And I liked Demaison as well. It was very sad. Tell the sun and the stars hello for me. It was.
No.
These books, guys, these books. I'm serious.
I know.
Sometimes I'm reading them and I'm like, Rick Riordan, this is so stupid. I know you write in middle grade, but you didn't have to go there. And sometimes I'm like, Rick Riordan, this is so beautiful. I'm like losing my soul over here. Like, what is
Know. Oh.
I know it's. I think it was in Mark of Athena when I believe it was the Cyclops was dancing around in a tutu, and I do the same thing you do, McCall, in that sometimes I just disregard it because I'm like, look, I'm almost 25. Like, this is not funny to me, but I can see why it would be funny to, like, a sixth grader. And so I just kind of ignore it and try to get to the meat of the story. And you have to do that when you're a little bit older and you're reading these books. But my God, when you get to scenes like that with the sun and the stars and everything, it just destroys you. And you're like, seriously? This is supposed to be a middle grade book. Like, how is this possible?
Yep, I do the same thing, especially with the Percy turning into a guinea pig thing and, other such events that have happened in every book because they are for kids. Yeah, no, it's remarkable how well he writes these overly, crazy dramatic scenes where, this giant is sacrificing his life for them and he barely knows them, and it's, yeah, just so gorgeous. Say hello to the sun and the stars for me. Like, no.
Well, that actually brings up something that I has sort of been my an issue that I had with the Heroes of Olympus in general, which is that, like, in Percy Jackson, the books are much shorter. So, like, yes, Percy has his obstacles that he has to go through in every book, and like he has this quest and blah blah blah. But for some reason, they don't take up as much time as they do in when it's sort of like the formula doesn't quite translate as well, because especially in the early ones now, like it's more about the plot. But like in the especially like, oh my God, the Lost Hero, I was like, okay, now Jason's gonna have his quest, and now Piper's gonna have her quest, and now Leo's gonna have his quest, and now because this is Jason's book, Jason's gonna have a quest again. Like by the time they got to the part with like the North Wind or whatever it was, I was like throwing the book. And even the Son of Neptune, which I was not even going to read, and then I read it and loved it. I was still like, you know what? Like, the bottom line is, and you can see it through all these books. You know, Piper gets her moment to shine in this book. Like, obviously, Frank has his thing, and they're more emotionally connected. They're more emotionally moored, I think, than they were earlier on with like all that just nonsense about the giants. I don't care, but like, I don't know. What do you guys think? Do you think it would have been better off if like there were fewer characters, or like not everybody got to have a quest in every single thing, or not quest specifically, but like challenge. I don't know.
I think that this book was a lot more balanced out than some of the other ones, even though we had so many characters. I mean, that definitely is a drawback in a lot of ways, but at the same time, I wouldn't really want to give up any of the characters. I mean, not even like Piper and Jason, because they all have their own spots. And yeah, maybe we wouldn't necessarily have to get like their point of views. They could just be there, but each of them have their own stories now and their own issues that they have to work through. And I think that what this book did really well was sort of connect them to each other. And we got to see like Jason and Nico, of all people, sharing a moment. And Leo and Frank were sort of sharing, their own moment when Leo got him that bag to protect his piece of firewood. And it's just, I mean, that's what I live for in these books, is the relationships and the connections that they have. And so even though I definitely like have seen some issues with the things that you were talking about in some of the other books, I thought this one was just balanced a lot better.
The individual challenges through this book for each character felt a little more organic to the journey they were taking. Like when Piper had to face off with Keone on the ship, like it wasn't like they went off to have Piper's adventure. Like it just kind of happened. And Frank having to save Nico when with the cow things with the poisonous breath. Like, I mean, these things that happened kind of came up organically in this book that I really liked that a little better than, we have to go do this, and this is obviously Leo's quest, and then we're gonna do this, and Jason is going to take the lead. And I liked that sometimes the trouble just came to them and they had to deal with it, and each character kind of came up in their own and took care of it. Kind of like Frank, also Frank, with the Roman soldiers, the ghost soldiers. That, again, it was another thing that kind of happened in the moment, and he stood up and took care of it and did what he had to do. And I really liked that aspect of this book a lot more.
Yeah.
So kind of a difficult question, I think, but do you guys prefer Percy Jackson in the Olympian series or the Heroes of Olympus series, and why?
Ooh.
It's kind of a loaded question.
Yeah.
I think as a cohesive whole, I prefer Percy Jackson. Obviously, these aren't done yet, but I do think that there is a lot of stuff in these books that could have been edited out. If this was his first series, which wouldn't have happened for multiple reasons, but theoretically, if it were, I think they would have been, chopped more. But at the same time, I do really love a lot of the characters in here, and because we're not stuck in Percy's head, we do get to know a lot of people a lot more intimately, and I'm really glad that Hazel and Frank are in my life now. I love them as characters. I think they're beautiful constructions, and so I guess I'm really happy that these exist, but Percy Jackson has to be my overall quality choice.
I'm gonna have to say the opposite. While I love The Last Olympian and I love Battle of the Labyrinth for all that they are in the Percy Jackson series, really, really love those books, especially Mark of Athena and House of Hades for me have been a major highlight in the whole Percy Jackson world. Lost Hero and Son of Neptune, while they had their issues for me, I was really angry that we were separated from Percy and Annabeth, but Percy especially, for an entire book with Lost Hero. I also understood why it was that way and why we had to be pulled away just after finishing Percy Jackson. We had to kind of be separated from him and get to know these other characters so that we would be even at all emotionally invested in them. I really, really enjoyed the Heroes of Olympus series. I like that the stakes have been raised a bit, and that rather than just focusing on the Greek, you're also getting this, Roman influence that is its own massive collection of stories, and its own, in its own right has things that I would love to see them delve into, him delve into later. But the whole Greek versus Roman thing is very interesting to me. And that introduced with all of the craziness going on with Hades and with just the entire events of Mark of Athena and House of Hades, I have to choose Heroes of Olympus.
I'm really glad you said that, because I was going to feel really guilty if I was the only one that said that I liked Heroes of Olympus better. And I still feel guilty because I feel like I'm cheating on Percy Jackson and the Olympians, because, it's the first series. You're supposed to sort of love, them the most because they've been around longer and you have so much of a connection to them and that sort of thing. But Heroes of Olympus, all of our heroes have grown up, and it's just really nice. Like you said, the stakes are higher, and it's really nice to see them a lot more mature than they were before. And hands down, without a doubt, House of Hades is my favorite Percy Jackson book. And I think that what he's done with the characters and what he's done with the plot and the themes in this book is just incredible. And I really like Heroes of Olympus. And that doesn't detract at all from my love for Percy Jackson and the Olympians, but I just really like the direction that he's going in with this set of books.
I really kind of wish, and I know that I'm pretty sure that he'll be done with Percy after this, but maybe even another series, but I really want Rick Riordan to write a YA series, properly YA.
Yeah.
He made a hilarious joke at the BEA children's breakfast that his new adult book was going to be called Hoes of Hades.
Oh my God! Can we talk for a second about how much of a troll Rick Riordan is on Twitter?
Oh my gosh, he is.
Did you see the dedication of this book?
Yes. Oh my God. Wait, is my book nearby? We need to read this.
I don't know, it's not.
It's really funny, though.
I've got mine on my Kindle. Hold on.
Yes, it's hilarious. He's so terrible, and I love it.
Yeah, I got to see him in an event at Symphony Space, like just after House of Hades came out, like the next day. And I went with a kid who is 10 years old and a friend of the family and his mom. And his mom really likes the books, you know, but like, I mean, I guess like probably me and Michael, the kid, were bigger fans. And like, we were both rolling at the presentation he was giving. Like, I was laughing just as much as this 10-year-old kid. And like, he is just so funny. He has this like incredible sense of humor. Like, God, I wish he had been my teacher.
Yeah.
And it was really interesting too, because his whole speech was about how like he wasn't really good at school and he like didn't get great grades and wasn't, you know, like wasn't particularly, you know, thought of as a talented student. And then he like goes and becomes a middle school teacher. And it's, yeah.
For anyone who wants, here's the dedication for that we mentioned. To my wonderful readers, sorry about that last cliffhanger. Well, no, not really. But seriously, I love you guys.
I mean, come on.
Oh,
He
Rick.
is.
It's wonderful. And I love the way he answers even questions that you think, you know that a child asks that question and that an adult would, say, oh, he's never going to answer that. He always comes up with a smart remark for him. And you know that his fans, these kids that are tweeting at him, love that.
Yeah. I mean, I eat it up too. I just sit there and I go through like my notifications and stuff, and I'm just like, what is he doing? But it's so funny. And he's just, I mean, he would have been, well, I'm sure he was, but an excellent teacher, because he just kind of gets these kids and gets what makes them laugh and what makes them interested, and that's why he's such a good writer.
Yep, totally agree.
But to kind of wrap up our discussion here, we have, not only do we have Percy Jackson, the Olympians, and Heroes of Olympus, but we have the Kane Chronicles, which, Kristen, I know you haven't read. McCall, have you read all three of those books?
I have actually, yeah.
Okay. I haven't read the last one yet, which is really bad because it's like several years old. And being like, the person who writes the Percy Jackson stuff and the Rick Riordan stuff on the website, I should probably get on that pretty soon. But I just haven't gotten around to it. Sorry. But he sort of has this formula, and the Kane Chronicles follows that same formula. It's about, demigods, and this is about the Egyptian gods, and it's definitely a different kind of story, but it's very much related to Percy Jackson in the way that those are written as well.
I read the Kane Chronicles, I think, because, they were Rick Riordan books. As a whole, I think they're without question weaker than Percy Jackson. I think part of it may be that the Egyptian mythology is fundamentally different, and it's like, obviously Greek mythology is not exactly friendly, but Egyptian mythology is like nasty, and like there's a lot of bad characters in there, and when you see them kind of like owning stores and whatever, like it's just not as interesting. I think he tried to kind of do the same voice as he did with Percy Jackson. Like the chapter titles are kind of that same snarky, like, we blow up the Empire State Building or whatever, and for me it didn't work as well. That said, I really did enjoy the last book the most, and I love Sadie Kane. I think she's a really well-written character. And yeah, so I think they're worth reading. This little boy actually that I went to the event with actually prefers the Kane Chronicles, and I was like, okay, whatever.
Yeah, I would agree that the Kane Chronicles just didn't do the same things for me that Percy Jackson did. And I kind of think that's why I haven't read the last book yet. Not to say that I don't want to or that I'm not looking forward to it, but at this point, I think I'll have to reread the whole series, which is something I'm not looking forward to because I have a lot of other books on my shelves that I'm really, really interested in reading. So might take me a while to get there, but. He's going to be coming out with a new series, and this series is going to focus on Norse mythology. So we've got like Loki and Odin and that sort of thing, and it's basically going to be in the same vein as these other stories, and it's going to be set in Boston. We're going to get demigods and that sort of thing. And, I I know a lot of fans aren't exactly excited for yet another series that is very much the same as Percy Jackson. And I don't necessarily blame them after The King Chronicles because I do agree that they're weaker books. But I am ridiculously excited for this, guys. I think it's going to be really good. And that's basically going on no information. Maybe I'm just like really hoping it's going to be really good. But I think that there's a lot to work with here. And considering, how big Thor and Loki and everything is right now, I'm really hoping people kind of latch on to this series and that it does really well. But are you guys looking forward to this one?
As someone who knows next to nothing about Norse mythology, like I know the names, I know Odin, Thor, Loki, like I know the general parts of it. I am ready for a Rick Riordan like history lesson. Like I want this mythology lesson from him, to kind of get familiar with him, and then I can go and find the stories and read the actual mythology and find out how he may worked it into his novels. I'm really interested to get into it because I don't know anything about it. So for me, it'll be a whole new world that I've never even dipped my toes in. So.
Yeah, I as a huge Loki fangirl, I am really excited for this. It's funny because obviously it's not going to be the Marvel Universe version of Loki, but I think it will be really interesting. I hope that he tries something else. I mean, I'm not even sure what that something else would be, but I hope that whether it's structure, whether it's narration, character, set up. I don't know, but I hope we try something slightly different. Because part of the King Chronicles, like I said, really did feel like trying to transpose that magic of the Percy Jackson series, like onto the King Chronicles. Even though that now we know they sort of exist in the same universe, so maybe that's okay. I don't know. But yeah, I mean, I think I am excited. I'm kind of like cautious, like I'm sort of not anticipating greatness. But I'm definitely gonna read it and, looking forward to reading it, hoping that I won't be disappointed, basically.
And oh my God, crossover novel, please, right? I need one of these.
That
Like, he's done short stories? No, I need a full-length novel.
would
Please and
just
thank
mess
you.
with my head though. Like even
It
the
would.
story, like the Son of Sobek was like what? Like what? They exist in the same universe? Like how is this possible? Like it was great seeing Carter and Percy, talk to each other, especially because like they're both like, pardon my language, but like they can be kind of assholes at points. But yeah, so I mean, it was really interesting on a character level, like on a mythology level, it sort of really confused me.
Yeah.
But I'm really looking forward to Annabeth and Sadie meeting because they are not gonna like each other.
No. Cool. All right. Well, we definitely fangirled about Rick Riordan for a while. There's nothing wrong with that, though.
Not
No.
at all.
In that case, if any of you guys want to get in touch with us, please make sure you tweet us at BookHype. You can put any posts on the podcast article, and we will be looking for them and responding. And please give us iTunes reviews so other people can find our podcast as
Yeah.
well. We really appreciate that. And definitely let us know what you think about Percy Jackson and the King Chronicles and this new Norse series and Rick Riordan in general. We love talking about him, obviously, so definitely give us your opinions as well.
I do just want to say we did get two tweets from people. Zoe Panis, known as Hermie Bookworm, said that she loved the whole thing with Nico. It was really interesting and it made her rethink the whole series. Obviously, we agree. And Audrey just said, "Oh my God, so excited you're doing an episode on this book. Loved it." So, yeah.
Yay!
All right,
Cool.
I just wanted to add that in there.
Yeah, no problem. All right, anything else before we go?
Stay Middle Eastern.
What?
Wait, no, not Middle Eastern. Like, stay. I don't know what Roman. Like, Mediterranean. Stay Mediterranean.
Mediterranean.
Oh, that is so staying in
They're
there.
just gonna like slam down her iPod and like message me angrily on Facebook.
No, I just want to thank you guys for letting me come on. I love talking Percy Jackson. It was really fun to talk with you guys, so thanks.
I'm really glad we got to talk about House of Hades because I was afraid we'd get somebody on who hadn't read it yet, and I really wanted to talk about very specific things. So it was
Oh,
great
yeah.
having you. And
Thanks.
Kristen and I are podcast buddies, and so it's always nice to be on another podcast with you.
Oh, definitely. I love it.
All right. Well, in that case, I'm Karen.
I'm Michal.
And I'm Kristen.
Thanks, guys. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.